This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Baruchim Abom, welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining. I want to continue in this series of interesting questions that arose during this epidemic, the COVID epidemic. And I especially thank those who are joining tonight who heard this morning. But I want to speak about a few inyanim, basically three inyanim, two of them that are just very basic to the epidemic that we just went through, and one of them very much connected to this week's parsha. The first one, if you have the Maror Mekoymos, it's on page 4, Ois Dalet. We're reading from Rav Asher Weiss's Kuntres, on which is known as the Minchas Osher Leket Shiurim Utshuvois Igrois Ma'amorim, that are Noigea for the Magefa of Corona, in his second edition, which is approximately 175 pages. And this question, interestingly, was posed to him by Professor Rav Avram Steinberg, who is a prominent pediatric neurologist, a medical ethicist, the director of medical ethics at Shari Tzedek Hospital, which I believe Rav Asher Weiss is the poisek there. And it's a very difficult question, and as Rav Asher Weiss presents it, basically their worst fears have come true, where many medical centers throughout the world are concerned that if the corona spreads as fast as they predict it may, there may be a very severe shortage of ventilators and respirators to go around, and they're going to have to make the all-important call of mi yichyahu, mi yamos. Is there any way to give priority in terms of life? You know, there's actually someone in our shul who had gone into the ventilator business, and I think he was doing okay, but this really gave him a lot of hatzlacha, because the next thing he knows, he's being contacted by New York State, and they want to order thousands of ventilators. So it's really... it's remarkable, you know, when you see 600,000 people, 600,000 Yidden, you make a bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem, and Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Chacham Harazim. Okay, Mr. AT was watching on Torah Anytime. Thank you. So, you make the bracha, Chacham Harazim. What does that bracha refer to? That you have to realize that God knows about all the secrets and all the what's going on in everybody's life. It's an amazing thing. There could be 600,000 people. Each one has their own set of circumstances and predicaments, and the Ribbono Shel Olam is aware of everybody's matzav. But what's really amazing is Mishane es ho'itim, machalef es hazmanim, how the Ribbono Shel Olam changes the seasons and the times, and how everyone is affected differently depending on your line of work. You know, someone in the ventilator business, they had a boon. Somebody echves who is selling something out of a store, out of a retail store, there's no business. People who have certain type of work, they were very matzliach, and other people had terrible challenges in parnasa. And the Ribbono Shel Olam calculates to the pinpoint precision exactly when he brings this machla how it's going to affect kol yachid v'yachid uvachol prat uprat. Now, as mentioned, because of the possibility of a shortage, then they're going to have to make the all-important call, mi yichye, mi yamos. And the question is, are there any principles, are there any general guidelines and rules when determining how to divvy healthcare and medical equipment? Who has first dibs? Who has first cracks? And Rav Asher Weiss basically establishes two general principles, and that is, we have to evaluate the goydol hasakana, we have to evaluate the gravity of the danger, and number two, the goydol hasikoy, and how hopeful are we that with medical intervention we will be successful. So regarding the first guideline, if unfortunately two people present themselves and both of them are very ill, so the halacha is, we give it to the one who is more in danger, the one whose life is in graver danger, the one whose life is in more jeopardy. he has precedence in terms of healthcare and medical equipment. So in other words, two people show up, the one who's in worse shape, one of them is deathly ill and the other one is still hanging in there. We're going to allocate the equipment to the one who is in graver danger. And number two, says Rav Asher Weiss, when two people present themselves, we're going to give the equipment to somebody who there's a better shot that they're going to survive. In other words, you have two people. One of them, it's unlikely the ventilator is going to help them. They're mamish in a terrible matzav, let's say 20% survival chance of survival. On the other hand, somebody else is in basically decent shape and he has a really good shot. So the person whose life, who has a better chance of surviving, will have precedence in terms of the medical equipment and the medical care. What about age, says Rav Asher Weiss? Is age a factor? You know, let's say two people present themselves. One guy is 30 years old, and he expects, you know, has at least another 90 years old, and someone who is 80 only has 40 years left. So maybe, should we give it to the 30-year-old? The younger person, so Rav Asher Weiss says, in halacha, we do not find anywhere that age makes a difference, that age is a factor, that age plays any role whatsoever in determining the quality of one's life, the value of one's life. There, in no way do we say that a younger person is more valuable, his life is more valuable than an older person, and therefore, halachically, age is a meaningless factor. Says Rav Asher Weiss, a very important principle, all of these laws of Kedima are only regarding if we have two people in front of us, which one are we going to hook up to the machine? But once we've hooked somebody up to the machine, Mr. Deutsch, you're still in Australia, right? But once we've hooked somebody up to the machine, so then the halacha is we cannot pull him off, even to give somebody who has a better chance of surviving, even to give somebody who more likely, who's in graver danger. In other words, Rav Asher Weiss says, once somebody is hooked up, it belongs to him, you can't take him off, you can't remove him, even if you have somebody who you think you could save their life, is in graver danger and has a better chance of surviving. Now, the question is as follows, says Rav Asher Weiss. Let's say the situation has been reduced to where you have very limited equipment and somebody is in the hospital. And let's say they're unlikely to be helped. In other words, if you hook them up, very far chance that you're going to be able to help them. Furthermore, let's say they're in not such grave danger. And on the other hand, you have somebody else who the situation is as follows. Right now, there's no one else in the hospital. But it was on one of those days, maybe 6 weeks ago, when you could ask the Hatzalah, every few minutes they're getting calls, every few minutes people were rolling into the emergency room. And so the question is, right now you have a chole bifanecha who needs the ventilator, but it's very unlikely by hooking them up you'll be able to save their life. On the other hand, in 10 minutes, in 15 minutes, in an hour, somebody will be brought into this emergency room. And they will have a much greater chance of saving their life. It will be much more likely and possible to help them. So in other words, if you have two people in front of you, certainly you give it to the one who's in graver danger. Certainly you give it to the one who you could help more. But right now you only have one person in front of you. And the other person doesn't exist, is not bifanecha. So then, can you delay and refrain from treating someone who's in the emergency room to spare and save the ventilator to use on somebody else who you'll have a better chance of helping? Says Rav Weiss, Hineni nirash v'nivchad me'em asadin. Such a shaila, I tremble, I shudder to think about such a question because this is mamish dinei nefashos. However, says Rav Weiss, a revolutionary psak, that halachically there is no advantage of having the chole in front of you. There's no difference whether he's in front of you or you know he's coming. The fact that you know he's coming, that's tantamount to bifanecha. Says Rav Asher Weiss, this comes from the Chazon Ish in Yeradei Siman Reish Ches, that there's no nafkamina if the chole is bifanecha, Only if it's common or not. In other words, if it's likely that somebody who's really going to need it and someone who you could really help is going to be on his way, then you need to refrain and save it for that person. Says Rav Weiss, Hagaba Atzmacha, just imagine the following case. You have someone in the emergency room who, unlikely you could save their life with a ventilator. And you get a call on the phone, someone's being brought in the ambulance, and very likely if you hook them up, you'll save their life. So what? You're going to say, oh, this person's in front of me, I should just give it to them, even though I know someone's on the way? No, that would not be mistaber if you know someone's on the way. So likewise, if it's a matzav of, people are constantly coming in, and it's only a matter of a short amount of time, the next person will be brought in, you are authorized to sort of hold on to the equipment to be able to save it for the next person. Now, says Rav Asher Weiss, perhaps we could bring the following raya and support to this idea that if you know someone's coming, that's like they're in front of you. The Shulchan Aruch Paskins in Yaradeus and Reishon on Aleph, Rebbe, and during years of famine, he once gave tzedakah to an Am Aretz. And he was very nitztayer, he was very pained, because he could have given it to a Talmud Chacham. So when he found out that the guy, I remember somebody once asked Rav Avigdor Miller, what's a Talmud Chacham? Is that a Talmud Chacham? Someone who knows Tshuvas Noid Behuda? Shas Tshuvas Rebbe Kiva Eger? Ketzois Nesivas? He's a Talmud Chacham. So Rebbe gave it to an Am Aretz, and he was upset he could have given it to a Talmud Chacham. Says a Shulchan Aruch. Otherwise, had there not been a possibility that he could give it to a Talmud Chacham, you do need to support an Am Aretz. Furthermore, if someone comes in front of you and they're dying of hunger, you have to feed them. Even though maybe a Talmud Chacham will come in an hour and we'll need it. Ah, says Rav Asher Weiss. That means, furthermore, if a Gabbai Tzedakah has to feed an Am Aretz, but if by doing so it's going to come at the cost of giving money to a Talmud Chacham, you can't give it to the Am Aretz, even though the Talmud Chacham is not in front of you, he's coming. So we see that in order for someone, we see that if someone is on the way, that is considered as if they're in front of you. So again, this is all talking about in a matzav when the danger was very acute and people were, you know, being brought in nonstop. By the way, it would come out from, I'm gonna mention it in one moment. Also, if you knew for sure a Talmud Chacham was next, you would not be allowed to feed the Am Aretz. So we see, says Rav Asher Weiss, a very interesting halacha, that even though the other person's not in front of you, the fact that you're positive that they will eventually come within a short amount of time. Now, what a short amount of time is, that's unclear. It's hard to know what a short amount of time is. But if you know for sure that they're coming, says Rav Asher Weiss, then you could save the medical equipment for them. Even though you could technically make a chiluk, that maybe there's a difference between saving medical equipment to save one's life and giving funding. But at the end of the day, says Rav Asher Weiss, we see the svara that the person does not have to be mamish in front of you for you to be able to refrain and treat and hold on to equipment for later. Now, why, says Rav Asher Weiss, this is not similar to when you have various mitzvos that are weighing on you, and you want to know which mitzvah to perform first, so you fulfill the mitzvah that is incumbent upon you now before a mitzvah that is incumbent upon you later. But that's when various mitzvos are incumbent upon you. However, in this situation where you have we're not dealing with performance of mitzvahs. We're dealing with human beings. And you want to know, who do you give the equipment to? You would be entitled to wait and give it to someone who would benefit greater from this equipment. Now, says Rav Asher Weiss, in his opinion, he disagrees with those gedolim who want to say that first come, first serve. You get to the hospital first, you're zoicha in the ventilator. Says Rav Asher Weiss, what kind of zechia is this? This is some kind of monetary acquisition. There's some kind of kinyan. We're dealing with hatzalas nefashos. There's no monetary right here. Says Rav Asher Weiss, I've seen, then I saw in the Tshuvas of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, in the Mincha Shloimai, in Chelek Tinyana Simon Peibav, who he is mefalpel in the sugya. And Rav Shlomo Zalman says, do not give medical equipment to someone who is unlikely you'll be able to save if you have a shortage of medical equipment. However, Rav Shlomo Zalman says, once you start treating patient A, then you're sort of subject to patient A. You can then and go dedicate that equipment to patient B, even though you haven't hooked up patient A yet. It's almost like oisek b'mitzvah pater min ha-mitzvah. However, says Rav Asher Weiss, probably Rav Shlomo Zalman never offered a definitive psak. He's just saying it b'darach halimud, because never in our history did any of these questions ever, were they ever lemaisa, did they ever realistically come up that Rav Shlomo Zalman would have given a definitive pshat. I would ask that why don't we utilize the following rule. Now, you want to know, what if it's a matter of Gentile and Jew, Mr. Deutsch wants to know, in Australia. So, L'chaira, look, there's even a question, is one allowed to treat an Akum, an Oyved Koychavim Azolos? Is one allowed to save their life? So basically, we do it Mishum Eva. But certainly, there's no question that priority would be given to B'nai Brisenu, over, let's say, Stam Atzelem Aleikem. In other words, there's no question. Even the Mishnah says in Horeos, an Ish is Koidem Lisha. So these are all interesting factors. Now, I would ask the following question. Why don't we say the following principle? Why don't we say Mitzvah habali yadcha al tachmitzana. Someone comes into the hospital, you have a ventilator, good, the chances of saving there were 20%, and maybe in an hour you'll have the chance of 80% of saving the next guy, but isn't there a rule? Mitzvah habali yadcha al tachmitzana. We have a shir, an old shir on Parshas Vayakel, a famous shaila. Somebody is in jail, and they're willing to let them out of jail one day a year. What day should you pick? Should you pick, some say pick tomorrow. You never know if you're going to make it past tomorrow. Some say no, wait till Yom Kippur. But we basically, it's machloikis, the Chacham Tzvi and the Radvaz. But we basically maintain that you do it as soon as possible, because you never know. You never know if you're going to make it. You never know if you're going to survive and so forth. So why don't we say that save the first patient? I mean, who knows what's going to be in an hour? Maybe Mashiach will come. Maybe they'll invent a vaccine. Maybe, who knows what could happen in an hour? Why don't we utilize that svara of mitzvah habali yadcha al tachmitzana? Okay, that's the first shaila for tonight. Let's see. One more moment. Beautiful. Okay, how's everybody doing so far? Everyone's happy? Everyone's in good mood? Okay, the reason why I'm speaking about this now, to speak about this, you know, like 4 weeks ago, people were having such anxiety, this shiur would just, you know, people would have to go on medication or something from a shiur like this. But now, people are calming down a little bit. I even saw two people smile already on the shiur today. I haven't seen smiles in a very long time. You know, Oyve, who's that? I mean, don't tell me, but how's he doing?
Baruch Hashem is recovered, he's at home.
Thank God. She's having a refuah shleima.
I asked you about Brian because it was the most severe case in the whole of Australia and he survived. And the whole thing is, when you ask him what's the chance of survival, this is a proof that the doctors themselves had no idea what to do with him.
I second that. There's a great, very great degree of uncertainty and the unknown, and that's an understatement. Next shaila, we go to Oizvav. And that is, this is an interesting shaila. that, again, because of the fear of the shortage. Shloimi, how you doing? Because of the sheer of the fear of shortage of ventilators, there was a possibility of hooking two people up to the same ventilator. In other words, let's say you have one guy, patient A, hooked up to the ventilator. When patient B is brought in, so there was a notion, maybe we'll hook up patient B to the same ventilator. Now, this is talking about where the person's really in a deep coma and the breathing is completely monitored by a machine. And this can only be done under these kinds of circumstances. But the problem is that there is a slight possibility by hooking up patient B to the same ventilator patient A is on, it could be very painful, very dangerous to patient A. Patient A may lose his life. It's not likely, but it's possible that by sharing a ventilator and saving the life of patient B, it may, there is a chance, a small chance, but a chance that patient A will lose his life. And the question is, again, can we try to save the life of patient B, risking patient A's life? So Rav Asher wife says again, this is a very difficult shaila. This is a shaila of life and death. And God-fearing doctors have asked and presented this question, you know, what do we do under these circumstances? Well, says Rav Asher wife, since we have no alternative, we have to make every effort to save another life. And we're allowed to do it. And even though there is a possibility it may cost patient A his life, that's not considered like the doctor is murdering patient A. That is not his kavana, and he is allowed to sort of ignore that possibility, says Rav Asher Weiss, because look, the reality is, whenever a doctor gives more attention to a particular patient, that patient has a better shot at surviving. So what do you do when a doctor needs to leave a room and visit another patient and see another patient? How could he go to the other patient? By minimizing the care of the patient he's currently seeing, it may cause damage, it may actually cost that person his life. But the answer is the doctor is sort of, that's not his intention. His intention is to help as many people as possible. And the fact that it may indirectly result in the harm of the first patient, well, that's a risk you're allowed to take. For example, especially patients in the ICU. Well, once the doctor walks out of the room, well, that patient's hope and chance has just been minimized and mitigated. Nevertheless, the doctor has no alternative. He can't be with one patient the entire day. Says Rav Asher Weiss, Ma'isim b'chol yoyim, when a division of the hospital and a part of the hospital is full of choylim, let's say in the ICU, they're packed, and another acutely ill patient is now brought into that ward, what they'll do is they'll take out the guy who's in the best shape and they'll put him elsewhere, even though it might be harmful to him, because what are you going to do? That's we have to make estimated guesses and choices, what's best for the overall status of everybody. Well, says Rav Asher Weiss in a fantastic shaila. He says, a Chazon Ish has a chiddush. Somebody shot an arrow, or someone is forced to shoot an arrow, and that arrow could either be shot into a crowded area where it would perhaps kill and hurt many, many people, or he could direct it to a place where it will only hurt a few people. Not only is he recommended to divert it to where less people will be hurt, it's a great mitzvah to do so. Actually, Rav Asher Weiss says the precise case was a Talmid of the Chazon Ish once reported, basically there was a driver who lost control of his bilamin, bilamav. You know, who knows what bilamav are? In Hebrew. You know that language, a foreign language? Bilamav. What are bilamav? What are the translation of bilamav? Like, komisha boilem pi, bilamav are the brakes. Basically you have a driver. Imagine, you know, he loses control of his brakes. And he's galloping out of control. So basically, and he's headed to a crowded area. Maybe there's a store and there are 100 people eating outside of the store. And meanwhile, the car is out of control. The brakes are failing and he's headed to this crowded area. And now he could veer off. The only thing is, if he veers off, he's going to hit and kill one person. Do we say, okay, look, it's not my fault that the brakes are failing. Right now it's headed in that direction. Those people, there's a death sentence on them. And the guy walking innocently in the other direction, Hashem wants him to live. I don't have a right to now go kill, that guy who's walking innocently down the street. I'm not headed in that direction. In other words, the question is, can I now take into my hands and make a decision to kill somebody in order to save more lives? And Chazon Ish says, you need to do it. And if you do it, you don't need to do tshuva. That's not called killing someone. That's not called killing someone. That's called Hatzolas Nefashos. You're not intending to kill anyone. You're intending to save the lives of perhaps dozens of people. So too over here, by putting this new patient sharing the ventilator, you're not trying to hurt the first patient. That's the last thing on your agenda. You want to help as many people as possible. It's unlikely you're going to be hurting the first patient. And therefore, Rav Asher Weiss says, that is the way to go and that is the correct procedure. Okay, I want to conclude this evening with a very interesting shaila. That's very relevant to the corona. And tomorrow, next week will be our grand finale, Bezus Hashem Yisbarach. This is the last shiur that is only going to be on Zoom. So for all you out there who will not be in the shul next week, for example, I don't think the Mr. Deutsch in Australia will be able to be at this year, although you're certainly invited. But Bez Hashem, next Wednesday we're going to...
The country, what are you talking about?
What?
I can't even get out of the country to go out to school. My daughter's going to have a baby too.
I don't know, maybe we could get a special dispensation for the shiur or something. I don't know. But Bez Hashem will be able to move into the shul next Wednesday. Officially, we could fill up a quarter capacity. We're taking it slow. We're going to have about 25 people in the main sanctuary this week and the ladies section, another minion downstairs. But Bez Hashem, the following Shabbos, we'll be able to expand further. The next Shaila is, when I had my case, which was in a certain way extremely mild, because when I had an active case of corona, I had very little fever, barely over 100. But I did lose taste and smell, but just for a short amount of time. I know some people in the shul were calling me for days. They still can't taste. I said, you know, be happy you could breathe. You know, I'll trade with you the breathing for the tasting. You know, so when my taste came back, I had a problem with the breathing. Baruch Hashem, it's on the mend. But taste and smell are the telltale signs of the corona. And what's a fascinating shaila, and this occurred over Pesach, and I want to tell you something. If you can't taste food, eating is just not the same. You know, forgive the pun, but eating has no tam. You know what I mean? So you eat food, it tastes like dust. You're like the nachash. It's like the curse of the nachash. So the question is, somebody who can't taste, what do you do with the mitzvah of matzah and maror? This week's parasha, it's Pesach Sheni, yeah? So it's like our shir, we're revisiting Pesach. What do you do if you can't taste the matzah and you can't taste the maror? Can you make a bracha on it? Is that considered eating? Is chewing food? You know, taking your teeth and just crunching it and ingesting it without any flavor, without any taste. I mean, that's not eating. Is that eating? Can you make a bracha? Can you make a berachas hamitzvah? And the question is twofold. Number one, can you make a berachas hamitzvah? And number two, can you make a berachas hanehenen? Can I make a shahako? Can I make a hamoitzi? I'm not enjoying it. What kind of enjoyment is it? So Rav Asher Weiss first establishes that in Shas, in general, we find four different categories of unusual types of eating. For example, number one, achila gasa. Someone who eats achila gasa on Yom Kippur, it's a discussion in Yuma and in Yevamis. We learn from here, someone who eats achila gasa, it's not achila. And you're not yoytze the mitzvah of matzah if you eat achila gasa. However, Tosfos over there, and the Ramah and the Mishavura brings it down, says there's two kinds of achila gasa. There's achila gasa when, like, you know, after a Shabbos meal, you have no appetite anymore. Somebody comes after a Shabbos meal. Oh, here, you want a bowl of cholent? I mean, I'm finished. I'm good. I don't want a bowl of cholent. On the other hand, sometimes a person has such a big meal that not only do they have no appetite, they're disgusted by food. Food is despicable to them. When a person is that full, then the eating is not considered eating. So in other words, when you're full and you're not hungry, then if you eat matzah, that's not mitzvah min ha-muvchar, but you're yoytzei the mitzvah. And the Mishnah Berurah brings this down lahalacha, that someone who eats the afikoyman and they're not really in the mood of eating, it's not mitzvah min ha-muvchar. But if someone is so stuffed and they ate so much that the thought of food is despicable to them, that's not considered achila. That's one category of eating. Would anybody say that someone who has lost the sense of taste is not considered eating? Donnie Rosenthal, what would you say? You think that's considered eating? Is that eating? Somebody who doesn't have taste and smell?
No. In my
book. What do you say? Not eating?
Well, otherwise it's not.
It's not eating. But look, you know, there's some people, they're very disciplined. They only eat to keep themselves alive. So they get the nutrition either way, regardless of whether there's food or not. There should be maybe perhaps considered eating. I think there's a difference between achila gasa, where you can't even get it down, and someone who he's going to eat to keep himself going. He needs nourishment. He just doesn't taste anything. Then there's a concept of karchai besiv. If you wrap up matzah or maror in an inedible object, like a fiber, so the halacha is that's not considered eating, because that's shaloi kederach achila. Is that analogous to someone who can't taste? Not really, because someone who can't taste, he's getting the sensation of chewing, he's mixing the food naturally, there's nothing interposing between his mouth and the food, it's just that he doesn't get the sensation of taste. Then there's something called shaloi kederach achila. Let's say someone eats with a feeding tube. So that's, if you eat that on, let's say IV on Yom Kippur, that one is pater. And some say the concept of shaloi kederach achila is only by machalais asurais, not by mitzvais. And then there's another category of eating something that's harmful for you. For example, if somebody eats vinegar, you don't make a bracha because it hurts you. Would that be analogous to somebody who eats food and can't taste? No, because someone who can't taste, it's not harmful to them, it's just they don't have the enjoyment. Now the Mishnah Berurah says that if the vinegar is not that potent, you do have to make a bracha. And the Shaar Tzion even says that if you eat vinegar on Yom Kippur, even though you would technically have to make a bracha on it, because if the vinegar is not that strong and potent, but you would not be chayiv for eating on Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur has a higher level requirement of hana. On Yom Kippur, it's only not considered fasting if it's yisuva daita. In other words, someone who eats a kazayis on Yom Kippur is still fasting. You have to eat a much larger amount of kikoseves hagasa. The bottom line is, Rav Asher Weiss says, this is probably most analogous to somebody who eats cooked matzah. We know that if you eat matzah mevusheles, you're not yoytzei because you don't get a taste of that matzah. Oh, so we see you have to get a taste. Says Rosh Weiss, no, it's not analogous. Cooked matzah, it's not possible to get a taste. It is matzah which is inherently tasteless. But what if the matzah is inherently matzah? It's just your particular set of circumstances doesn't allow you to enjoy it. Perhaps you would be yoytzei. In fact, says Rav Asher Weiss, you know what this would be analogous to? What if somebody swallows matzah? You have a guy, he's tasting really good. You know, I spoke to a lot of guys. They got their taste back, how? Prednisone. They took the steroid, and in 5 days, 40 milligrams, ignore all my medical advice, please, but 5 days, 40 milligrams a day, that does the trick. All the senses are sharpened. People went from 60% taste to 95% taste. I heard everybody's geschäft. But let's say a guy who tastes perfectly and swallows matzah. You're yoytzei. What do we see from there? You don't have to actually get taste from the matzah. What you have to do is you have to... It has to be matzah that could be tasted, that has taste. Says Rav Asher Weiss, we learn from the case of Bala Matzah Yatzah that you don't have to be margish the tam. And therefore, la halacha, if you lose your taste, you can make a bracha on matzah. What about marar? Marar. We know the Gemara says that if you swallow marar, you're not yoytze. And the Rashbam explains, because you need to have a bitter taste in your mouth. So, says Rav Asher Weiss, if swallowing marar, you're not yoytze, which means you have to be able to taste the bitterness. L'chayra, if somebody doesn't have taste, you're not yoytze the mitzvah of marar. So he says, but you could be mechalik, because the guy who swallowed the marar did not eat it in a way that taste could be gotten. But if someone eats it normally, he just happens not to have taste. Maybe you could make a bracha. Says Rav Asher Weiss, it's a glata svara. It's a good chilek. Aber, we cannot definitively say that you're allowed to make a bracha based on a svara. In other words, the Gemara of Bala Marar La Yatza seems to indicate you have to be able to get flavor, you have to be able to get taste. And even though you could be mechalek, maybe that's only because you have to be able to eat it in a way that you could get taste. But says Rav Asher Weiss, Safek Bracha is Lahakel, and therefore the bottom line is that when it comes to matzah, if you don't have taste, you could make a bracha al achilas matzah. When it comes to marar, if you don't have taste, you cannot make a bracha al achilas marar. And what about birchas hanehenen? So that's a major discussion. What is the hana of eating? Is it the flavor on your taste buds? Is it the sensation of chewing? Is it the feeling of satiety in your stomach? The bottom line is, Rav Asher Weiss concludes, that if somebody does not taste food, the halacha is you still make a bracha. Because the ikar enjoyment and benefit of food is the nutritional value, provided that it's eaten in a normal way, which this person is eating. He's chewing it, he's salivating, his tongue is mixing it, and the whole process of ingestion and digestion is occurring in the normal way. He just happens not to be getting an element of the hana, but he would still make a bracha. Okay, Marv Rabbeisa, we're going to hold it over here. Next week will be hopefully the grand finale of this subject. Next week's topic is Hilchos Zoom, the halachic ramifications of this new invention called Zoom. You know, there was this comic going around. You know, who's behind Corona? Is it China? Is it Italy? Is it some mad scientist somewhere? So they had a guy pull off the mask of this ghost Corona, and who's underneath? Zoom, the Zoom company. Anyway, Rabbi said that will be next week's shir. Wishing everyone a great night.
Shkach.
What?
I'll miss it.
Why?
Are you going to be on Zoom next week as well?
Yeah, we actually figured out a way to live stream and Zoom simultaneously, so we could be in the shul, we could be on all of the different venues. Be'ezras Hashem.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.